We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Before we get started, I wanted to invite you to our next PaperCamp conference, which will take place March 14th and 15th in Los Angeles. This is our signature program where we tackle product development for wholesale, sales strategies, marketing to retailers, and exhibiting at trade shows. We will spend 2 days diving deep with you and helping you figure out everything you need to know to build a strong wholesale foundation. We're going to provide you with a ton of resources that took us years to uncover and share our favorite manufacturers with you. And we will welcome you with open arms to our Trade Show Bootcamp family. If you'd like to join us, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp and register. Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Proof Your Product, and welcome to our podcast. Today is part two of our interview with Natasha Case of Cool House, an ice cream company located in Los Angeles, California. Now, if you missed part one with Natasha, I want to encourage you to push pause right now and go back and find part one. Then listen to that and come back to this one. That way you'll listen in order. So a little bit about Natasha. She works as the CEO of Cool House, creating new products, designing merchandise and packaging, running the marketing department, building new relationships, and innovating ideas that keep Cool House on top of its game as the company continues to expand. Natasha was named to Forbes 30 Under 30 for food and beverage and Zagat's 30 Under 30 for New York City. Here on part two of our interview, Natasha talks about how Cool House focuses their marketing on messaging and storytelling, why she believes leadership and managing are different skills that all entrepreneurs need to learn, and why it's good for new entrepreneurs to dream big. I appreciate you being so vulnerable and open about sharing that, because I work with a lot of entrepreneurs that are just starting out, and we work with seasoned people too.
Yeah.
But for the people starting out, I feel that many of them get really excited and hung up on a lot of logistics, like having a beautiful website and, you know, making sure their branding is all in alignment. Whereas I do try to remind them, like, it's about the product.
Yeah.
It's about the service. Whatever you're selling needs to be the thing that you're spending the most time on. You can build out your customer experience. You can build out the brand story.
Yeah.
You can build that stuff out later as you kind of get momentum.
Totally.
But I think, you know, it's easy to fall into that. Well, I want the beautiful business cards and the website and the, you know, the branding and all that stuff.
No, so. Definitely. I think, you know, really having something really authentic at a core that, and a basic way of communicating that. And yeah, having mm-hmm. a product that is special, and why are people going to want this above other things? Mm-hmm. Because there's always going to be more money to spend on all of those, you know, elements you just described. Like, that never ends, you know?
Right.
But
never.
What are you spending for if it's not like that really special, that really kind of special spirit behind what you're doing? And I think especially right now, I see the brand starting today versus when we were in startup mode. And the other founder and I, Freya, who's also my wife, we're now married, laugh about mm-hmm. this sometimes. It's like, it was not glamorous, like to be a startup. And again, this is only a decade ago. I mean,
right.
You should have seen, we lived at one point, it was literally like a store, like on Sunset Boulevard in LA. And we were like, there was like a curtain separating like the workspace. And then we like lived in the back, you know, and it was mm-hmm. like terrifying. It was like not a safe neighborhood. It was not cool. I mean, it was, now you look back and it was like kind of an amazing experience. But you know, now these like co-working spaces and all like the panels and the conferences and the blogs. Yeah. And I think it's amazing, because I think it is a much more kind of supportive, more cushy like space. But some of those things can be distractions too. And it's so important yeah. to just like, just grinding and doing the work with a sense of purpose and with a sense of like, this is something I love and I really want to get it out there. That's the most important thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I always talk to people about knowing your why. And this kind of
yes.
ties into knowing
yes.
your audience too. But like, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I building the product that I'm building? What makes it important? What makes it significant? What kind of impact am I making?
Totally.
What's the goal behind
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. So. I think you're absolutely right. And I think your consumer wants to know that why. So think about it for you and think about how you're going to tell them that.
Yeah. The storytelling component. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have several arms of your business. You sell retail through your brick and mortar locations, as well as your ice cream trucks. And you also sell wholesale, everything from Whole Foods to Safeway and everything. How soon after launching do did you start to unfold these other business models, like these other arms of your business?
So the first 2 years, 2 to 3 years, was really like our bread and butter was the trucks. And that was expanding the truck fleet in LA and getting not postal vans converted into ice cream trucks type trucks, like more legit food trucks, and Texas and New York. And those are all still places that we operate. And so that's really like, I think, the business that we were. And I think we started to realize like, this is an amazing, it's like an incredible service, a hospitality model. It's boutique, it's the experience, it's all these things. But there, it was, you know, to, in order to really become the household brand of our generation, which is really, you know, what we're looking to become, the scalability is challenging on the trucks. Just each city has different laws and each truck is so unique and all those things. So we said, let's kind of go back to those two channels that we didn't think that we could, you know, tackle when we first launched, which was scoop shops and grocery distribution. And we, you know, opened our flagship store here in Culver City in 2011. And then, you know, around that year or two after, I just literally wandered into my local Whole Foods and I found the guy stocking the freezer shelf and I asked him, how do I become a brand
that who you buys? Stock? Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And he was nice enough to connect me to the point person at that time with Whole Foods that really was the liaison between emerging brands and, and the retailer, help kind of situate you not only from a logistical standpoint, but what does the brand look like? How's the packaging? Where is it priced at? All those things. And that's why
I was just going to say, going from the truck, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but going from the trucks to the scoop shop's different than the, you know, distribution through stores and selling wholesale. Like, those are very different go-to-market strategies. They require very different things. And so did you roll both of the scoop shots and the distribution out at the same time, or did you kind of do one then the other?
It was a similar timing. So I think we said they're very different strategies, but we said, you know, at that time, we don't know what's going to hit, you know? So let's do a little bit of both. I think there was a strong argument to be made for the scoop shop regardless, just because the trucks, like I said, they're an incredible force in their own right. But, you know, you either have to book them for your own private event or they can be difficult to track down. So there was, the brand had legs. It made sense to have a more permanent outpost and to really centralize our operation and our culture, you know. But then grocery also, it's like, you know, the way you could launch in Whole Foods, especially back then, it's not like it required necessarily a huge amount of capital or being able to, you know, make pallets at a time. You could start in a few stores and, you know, that's what was, I think, really special about all these brands that kind of came up at that time. Like, there was so much incubation through the Whole Foods model and through growth through them. And that allowed it to be like, again, a little bit of like the minimum viable product within that channel. And that's sort of how we approached it. And, you know, of course, it turns out like that is definitely the most scalable. And I think a great place to really create a brand that has legs that can become a household brand and not just, you know, live and die with trends, as I think is harder to do with scoop shops. And ultimately with scoop shops, you're beholden to leases and all these other, you know, and growing your team every time you open the shop. So it ended up being that, I mean, now the grocery business is 90%+ of their revenue.
I was
revenues.
Just going to ask, is that the larger portion now?
Yeah, definitely. And growing, I mean, this year we've doubled in the grocery business and we plan to do that ongoing.
Congrats.
Thank you. But I think what has made that work is the trucks being that activation, private event, really that specialty experience, and the shops having that element as well, but being a place to test ideas. And like when you and I were talking about flavors, that's where we see before we go to shelf, whoa, this milkshake and fries, this flavor that we kind of did more as like a PR stunt, like it has a huge following and it sells great. Let's consider taking that to grocery, which we did. So it's the whole triad is what makes it work.
I was just going to say, listening to you talk about each of these arms, it seems that each one serves a different purpose.
Yep.
And at the same time, it's helping you diversify your revenue stream so that if one isn't doing as strong, you know, maybe the other one's picking up the slack or vice versa, at least in the early days when you were kind of testing things out.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And it still happens. I mean, we can be definitely going on fumes in, you know, end of Q4 and beginning of Q1 in the ice cream business, not only because it's not as big of a time for sales, it's not as big of a drop off as people might think, but it definitely, you know, shrinks a little bit. But it's also because you're preparing to grow the next year. So you're doing a ton of production and of the most expensive kind of production, which is often the new SKUs at the end of Q4 and beginning of Q1. And so you're out, your lease is coming in and the most is going out in terms of cash. So something like a big truck activation in January, February, or a ton of holiday parties in December for on the catering side, or some sort of specialty thing happening in the shops, that definitely can add up to be cash that helps, even just from a financial standpoint, you know, the other branches of government operate. So, so it definitely, it's not only about the brand and storytelling in terms of how they all work together, but definitely I think the financial model is helpful. Mm-hmm. Catering's the biggest margin too, you know, by far. Yeah. So it's really interesting.
It is interesting. And it's fun to hear you talk about it from this perspective, because a large majority of my audience, they sell smaller gift items and many are doing retail and wholesale. And, you know, wholesale is like a whole season ahead. You know, people are designing, you know, Christmas cards for 2019 right now.
To
some extent.
Oh, I'm and 2020 so, is what I'm working on now. Not even right. kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're working ahead too. And the point is, you are trying to fuel the product development for that with cash. You know, you're paying for the product development of that, but you're also having to do marketing and sales for what you're currently, you know, releasing now. So it is a very large scheduled project that you have to kind of
pull
down into the smaller pieces.
I know. And I've come to love that. I mean, you have to really have timelines and goals to hit that you're beholden to. But, you know, back to kind of what we're saying earlier, I think that's probably the architect in me. It's like, I love the creativity, but I love for it to be grounded in these dates and this is when the shelf resets and this is when this needs to be done. There's structure behind it. And I think if you're, you know, the kind of person who kind of is fueled by that yin and yang, then doing something like, you know, wherever you're an entrepreneurial vision might take you could be a really, really good fit.
Absolutely. Can we talk marketing for a little bit?
Of course. Always.
In the early days, it sounds like you used Twitter and word of mouth and social media to fuel what you are doing. How has that changed over the years? Like, what types of marketing programs have been successful to you? What do you still lean on as your primary source for getting new people to know about your brand?
I mean, I feel like the thing that probably evolves the most quickly all the time, where you really have to have, you know, a finger on the pulse for it. So I think now it's, you know, there's sort of like the two branches of marketing, right? Like, I think there's, you know, there's trade spend and trade marketing, which there are a lot of more traditional ways to spend the money and to find your audience, especially like in the grocery world. And that's like, you know, the expo in Anaheim is our probably biggest trade show of the year, along with fancy food. And that's a whole, you know, like kit of parts as far as those pieces of marketing within that. And then there's, you know, the advertising you might do with a retailer, you know, demos. We try to be, even within that world, as creative as we can be, partnering with retailers and their social media, popping up in their social media accounts and taking over for a day and like bringing our unique personality into probably their more traditional, you know, personality that they project to their following and doing something there, or doing like really fun kind of across the aisle, different partnerships, like an affogato partnership with a coffee brand where buy this coffee, get a discount on ice cream, or buy this ice cream, get a discount on coffee, et cetera, et cetera. So always trying to think outside the box with those things, but that's definitely a big, big part of the marketing these days. And frankly, you often don't have a choice. I mean, you're coming into now these stores, we're getting into Publix, Safeway, Kroger's of the world. They're expecting you to come with a big plan, but also huge dollars behind it.
Interesting.
And then even within that, I would say there's, you know, field marketing that's like outside of the shop, but it's really, really driving the traffic into that retailer. So that could be showing up at like a festival of some sort, or even like a store opening as these grocery stores are expanding. So that's sort of like one channel of it. And the other side is really the brand marketing. And, you know, how do you, a lot of that is storytelling, and how do you really bring the brand to life for people when they're not at the grocery store, but it stays with them and they feel something. So when they are making that decision, you know, you really do come to mind in a way that's powerful, but also very authentic. So a big thing for us, you know, has been video content. We did our first like Cool House created video last year. Our awesome campaign, as we called it. Yeah, it's a really cool video, actually, with my friend Cindy Crawford making a cameo.
Nice.
Yeah, I was an investor in the business. Very cool. And just celebrating the kind of people who love Cool House and how like that makes us cooler because we make them a cool product. So it's like this this kind of endless loop of mm-hmm. you know, of who's behind the brand. That's a really huge way. I mean, brand marketing encompasses social media, and that's still massive as it was in the beginning. But of course, Instagram wasn't even around in the beginning. So like a lot of that has changed. Pay to play wasn't around in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, I had to laugh when you were talking about Twitter earlier, because I started my first product business in 2008, and I met so many. Instagram wasn't around, like you said, and we were all connecting on Twitter, but it wasn't. I work in a very visual industry, and so when Instagram did come out, it was like, oh my gosh, we can like show each other our work in a more, you know, an easier way.
Totally,
not just 140 characters,
right? And so, and that still was not that long ago. I mean, we've only been in this world for a few years, and it's such a dominating force, you know. And I think even for websites now, it's like there's so much you can do and so much you can tap into with that user comes to your site, which now we have, compared to last year, triple the amount of visitors coming to Cool House. But then it's like, what do you do with them on the site? What do you want them to see? What if you only have a minute or two with them, what's the most important thing? What's the hierarchy that you want them to explore? And so there's much more tactical thinking around that. How do you get them back there once they've left? You know, like, where does the transaction exist? Are you capturing email addresses? Like, there's so many pieces to that that are much more sophisticated and always, always evolving, you know, and so that's just, all of that is just changed leaps and bounds, you know, since we've been in business.
I'm over here smiling because I'm thinking to myself, you know, 10 years ago when you were starting and I was starting, I didn't think about retargeting ads on Facebook and like capturing email addresses or any of this stuff. And yet, you know, now it's such an important part of you running your business and growing your business.
Huge. And absolutely. So, there's, I mean, it's an incredibly, you know, multifaceted, I think, in that way. And, you know, partnerships and, you know, I could go on. There's so many different ways to put it out there. I think you kind of pick where you can really shine and anything that you do, how does it align with your messaging and your storytelling? You know, every single time you have to hammer it home so hard. So, you know, whether that's a partnership, an ad, video content, an element of the design, and it like really making that so, so strong so that you want someone to think like they see Cool House, they think of this, they see Cool House.
Yeah. I love what you said there about storytelling, aligning with storytelling and messaging. I think that's a really good metric for figuring out what do we move forward with.
And exactly.
Is this the right way to spend our marketing dollars or to spend our time developing new content, whatever it might be.
Totally.
You know, as you were starting, what were some of your greatest struggles or fears?
I think because I started the business pretty young, at 25, you really don't know a lot about managing. I think leadership and management are very different. You know, I think leadership is more kind of in your DNA, like you instinctually love to lead or know how to inspire people, because that's a lot of what business is like, are people really believing in your mission?
Yeah.
And how do you, like, literally you're convincing people, I mean, aside from obviously, let's say you're paying them a salary, but still, you're going to spend more time with the people you work with than probably your family. And so somehow you're like getting people to show up every day and do an amazing job for this probably kind of crazy idea that you started with. That's like a phenomenal thing. I think some people do just have that spirit that others want to, you know, like kind of jump on that bandwagon with and make it happen. I think that's really special. But separately, management, I really do think is the kind of thing that's a learned skill that takes time. And when you first start, you're sort of like, well, I told someone to do this. Why don't they just do it? It's like, it's weird to you. And you're like, well, I'm just going to go tell them to do it. They're doing it wrong. Like, you're not thinking of so many other kind of human facets behind what's actually going to motivate those people as their manager. And so I think, you know, there's definitely challenges and struggles around that. And I also think, you know, when you don't have a lot of experience, there is a thing of like, why should people listen to you? So that's something that's nice. Like after doing this now 10 years, first of all, you just have more of a body of work to speak of, but you really do learn who you want to be as a manager. You know, are you a good cop, a bad cop? Like how do you, you know, like what's the way that you like to assign a task and how do you deliver on those details or whatever that might be? It takes you a minute to figure out that for yourself. And I think you have to be patient with yourself and go through that journey. And then separately, you know, you see like no two people are alike. And that's the beauty of what we all do. But that's also a challenge because you have to really learn to understand people and what motivates them and what about what you're doing is going to speak to them. And again, I think you just learn to like, you know, kind of give that better read over time. And you can really, I think, fine tune management skills and get into a rhythm. And this just becomes stronger and stronger from there. So it's definitely something that's like, it was a shocking thing starting out. But now I think when you find your groove, it can definitely be a great thing.
Your team has, speaking of leadership and management, your team has grown substantially in the last 10 years. I mean,
oh yeah.
At what point did you bring somebody else in to help with that? Or were you always training and staffing and, you know, like getting people on board for that hiring?
Yeah. And it definitely was a, you know, just doing everything myself and ourselves, with Freya involved in the beginning. And it's kind of a good thing, I think, because you learn the basics and you also are really just putting yourself to the test and there's no way that the first few years aren't going to be a grind in that sense. You're building character.
Yes, among other things, but
right,
yes.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I think those first 2 years were really like, was an owner operated type of business, working every event, booking every event, communicating with the clients, doing inventory, all of those little things, the day-to-day operation. And I think after a couple years, we started to hire other people who could be managers. We didn't have the budget to afford insanely experienced, like unbelievable managers, but people to, you know, so that you could start to kind of work on some other stuff. I think 5 years is a really big mark to me that I think I really kind of mentally started to shift to I'm working on the business, not just in it. And once you're there, I think you never come out of it. And that's great because then you know, that was the stage when we really, I think, started to build the team, put the corporate team in place. That's now about 11 or 12, still pretty lean. And that's the way I plan to keep it. Everyone's very, got their purpose, got their mission, got their body of work. And I tend to believe that busier people actually accomplish more.
I would agree with you there.
So we're all very busy, but, I think that as the company grows and you can afford to hire stronger and stronger people, and it becomes this snowball effect. And I think you learn from them and you become better at what you're doing. You become more specialized. Mm-hmm. You could spend your time in a more deliberate way. This is what I'm going to do. This is my role at the brand, what I can do best that no one else can do. And that's what you should be spending all of your time on.
I 100% agree with you. What is an important lesson you've learned through your entrepreneurial journey about yourself or just as yourself as an entrepreneur, even whether it's personal thing or business thing?
Yeah, I think that I've learned one, how much I love for things to be inclusive. And I know that was there when I was telling the kind of foundation story, but it's so special what we have at Cool House, the diversity of the company, how many women we have in leadership roles. You know, we're not just talking the talk or walking the walk, and to really be part of what you feel is like a shifting tide and how that speaks to people on the other side when they're buying Cool House and eating Cool House, how that resonates with them. And I look at our audience and how diverse that audience is. And I think that's something that I really, really love. And being a native Angeleno, I mean, it's just a place filled with so much difference. And things like Cool House can bring everyone together. That's very, very special to me. I think that I do really, really love leading and inspiring. Like I'm very comfortable in that role. I think because I have, like I was telling a friend the other day, like I have such a strong feeling of purpose with Cool House. Like I actually think I freaked out my production manager the other day and I told him, I was like, I feel like I was put on this earth to do Cool House, you know, but it's like, it's so, every day is about getting closer to whatever that goal, you know, looks like for the brand and me personally. Yeah. And it makes it definitely much easier to then get other people feeling that way too.
I think it's incredible to hear you talk about your purpose and how you were put on this planet to do this. And even earlier with, you know, you can tell that you love what you do and you can tell that you're doing it with your heart, your soul, with great purpose. I also loved how you talked about yourself being your own ideal avatar, you know, client avatar. And like, because I think it's important to know all those pieces. It's important to know who you're speaking to. It's important to know what your purpose and what excites you. Because to your point earlier, if we're not excited about what we're doing, we're not going to do the best job possible. So
absolutely.
I don't know. It's just really exciting to hear you talk about your business with such passion and your startup story with such passion, even though I think all of us at some point feel like an accidental entrepreneur. We kind of fall into these things a little bit, but the way you've grown it has been very fun to watch. And I think you've done it very intentionally and it's been really, you've done a great job. So kudos to you on that.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Of course. So as we're winding down here, what advice do you have for other entrepreneurs who are just starting out in their journey?
Well, a mentor of mine, Bobby Margolis, who is the creator of Cherokee jeans. If you're a child of the 90s like I am, you'll have bought them at Target back in the day, for example. He loves to say, you can walk through a wall when you don't know it's there. And what that's saying is that in a way, some naivete or some inexperience or coming from a different field into another, that will make you take risks that you don't even realize you're taking. Mm-hmm. And then you get on the other side of it. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe we did that. But we just broke down this huge barrier that we didn't even see. Because when you don't see it, you go right through it. Yeah. And I think that's really powerful advice for starting out, because you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to know a ton. In fact, experts could just be we're used to doing things one way. And that's not how, you know, like disruptive businesses that change the game happen. So, you know, trust your instinct, listen to the experts and know when to take the advice, but also know when to trust your gut. And I also think just even if for nothing else as an exercise, think really big. Like, and I don't just mean like, oh, just like, you know, sit in a chair for a few minutes and think big, like put it on paper. Like, what does this mean for you in 5, 10, 20 years? Like, if this thing went all the way, if it was the biggest it could be, what does that look like? Where does that put you personally? I think especially women, we forget to think, well, personally, will I be happy in doing this? Mm-hmm. Do I want to do this for 10 years? Will I be able to pay myself enough, et cetera, et cetera? And just walk yourself through the exercise, you know, and see what that means to you. And I think putting it on a page makes it much more real than just like, you know, having a fantasy about it. Not to say there's anything wrong with that either, but I think it's a really good thing, especially when you're starting out, to have that kind of intention and that purpose.
I would even encourage people to go a step further and to tell someone else, a friend, a spouse, a significant other, whatever, family member, like say it out loud.
Yeah,
because you never know, you know, you can do whatever you set out to do. It's just a matter of keeping yourself, you know, on the path.
So. Yeah, exactly. And saying it to people and putting on a page, it's a form of accountability.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cool. So what's next for Cool House? What do you guys have coming up?
So I mentioned this dairy-free line coming out next year. So that's huge. That's 13 SKUs right there. And you'll be able to find the dairy-free sandwiches at Whole Foods nationwide. And then we're working on getting the dairy-free pints out there. We know co-op markets will be selling some of them, and we'll have more information on other stores that will before the end of the year. And then the 8 dairy pints in flavors like Mo Matcha Mo Chi, Hey Cupcake, Milk and Cookie Crumb, Thai Town Crunch, and Gladys Yellow Cake Batter. So many. They're just so good.
You're making me hungry right
now. Yeah, it's, I understand that. So a huge amount of product development. And then I'm working on something bite-sized for 2020. Yeah, very basically cool. Elevating and reinventing the bonbon. So excited for that. And then just looking to grow kind of the brand awareness and get more and more people to be part of the Cool House experience for next year as well. Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. Well, if people want to learn more about the brand, buy your ice cream, where can they find you online? Where can they follow you on social media?
So our website's cool.house, and social is pretty much all at Cool House. That's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And then as far as finding the product, actually we have a store locator on our website. So you can type in your zip code and the products you want to find, and it will tell you the closest store. But everything from a Whole Foods, Bristol Farms, Gelson's here in LA, and actually it looks like Ralph's, and definitely Safeway stores next year. So that would be like Pavilions, Albertsons, mm-hmm. In this area, but depending on where you live, Publix, Safeway, Wegmans, Hy-Vee, so many great stores all around the country, 6,000 doors, as you said. Wow. So definitely find us in your local store if you're not in LA, Dallas, or New York.
Excellent. Well, Natasha, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story as well as lessons you've learned. We really appreciate it.
I had a great time talking to you.
Hey, friends. When it comes to our Trade Show Bootcamp alumni, I am like a proud mama bear that wants to shout their successes from the rooftops. Everyone is working so hard and building strong, unique businesses, and it is inspiring to see, and I'm 100% honored that they allow us to play a small part in their growth and success. So today I wanted to share a success story from one of our alumni that attended Paper Camp, our Paper Camp conference. When Alex from Chez Gagnier came to Paper Camp, she had been in business for about 20 months. She did not have an office studio, she was working out of her living room, and she had a collection of about 80 letterpress greeting cards, which was pretty good. Some people come with fewer designs, but she had 80 letterpress greeting cards ready to roll. Alex knew that wholesale was her end game. She knew that's where she wanted to put her time, her focus, and her energy. So she came and she soaked up a ton of information at Paper Camp, and then she went home and put what she learned into action. Alex sourced new products, she reached out to new buyers, and she streamlined her internal processes for her business. Alex now works with a large number of sales reps. She has a small but mighty team working out of a new warehouse space that she's actually in the process of outgrowing right now. She's grown her product line substantially to include new product categories, and she's also increased the volume at which she is producing these products. This year alone, Alex exhibited at a number of trade shows. She's done dozens of trade shows since coming to Paper Camp. And within a year of her coming to Paper Camp, her hustle and hard work landed her products in more than 500 retail stores. It's been incredible to see her growth and her hard work play out. And I'm honored that she allowed myself and Paper Camp to be a small part in that success. If you are looking to grow your wholesale line, if you want to create a smart, strong foundation for your business, I invite you to join us at Paper Camp March 14th and 15th in Los Angeles. We are going to keep this small and intimate so that you can ask any and all questions that you have so that you can fast forward your business. Again, you can get information at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp, and we look forward to working with you. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.